Lessons I've Learned, a series of podcasts by global consultant, best-selling author, and former Harvard Business School professor, David Maister.
Hello, I'm David Maister. This series of 15 podcasts is called Managing Professionals, Attitudes, Skills, and Behaviors. It's designed to help people who have the responsibility for managing a group of professionals. This second episode, called How Managers Add Value, is based on my book, Managing the Professional Service Firm, and also my book, First Among Equals, co-authored with Patrick McKenna. What is it that distinguishes the most successful firms or group practices from ordinary firms in the same marketplace? My experience suggests that it has little to do with creative strategies or unique management systems, nor is it a matter of IQ or professional talent. The professionals I meet in the most successful firms are not consistently smarter or more talented than their counterparts at other firms. What is noticeably different at the best firms is a characteristic variously described as energy, drive, enthusiasm, motivation, morale, determination, dedication, and commitment. While many things appear to play a role in creating this dynamism, one stands out above all others: the skills and behaviors of the managers. In firm after firm, I've observed marked changes in performance from the same group of professionals, where the only thing that changed was a new individual appointed to the leadership of a practice. This should not be surprising. A professional practice is like a sports team, filled with talented athletes who will only win if they truly fulfill their potential. Professionals, like athletes, when left to their own devices, don't accomplish as much as they do when they are supported by a good coach. It's tempting to assume that since the typical professional firm is made up of intelligent, energetic individuals, they can be relied upon to be autonomous, self-starting professionals with no need to be managed. However, my experience suggests that the best managers really do add a very special value. First, through their actions, other people accomplish more and focus on more important things than they would if they were left to their own devices. Second, it's through the skill of the manager that the talents of powerful individuals are shaped into even more powerful teams, learning from and supporting each other. Professionals lead busy lives with many conflicting demands on their time and attention. In such a world, it's all too easy to be driven by the pressure of events and postpone or neglect activities that may not have to be done today, but are in fact essential for the future. All too often, as the phrase goes, the urgent drives out the important. Examples of postponable activities that are often neglected due to the pressure of daily business might include those extra touches of client service that build relationships, or the added time it takes to help a more junior professional learn a new approach, or the extra time taken to represent the firm in important meetings of the business community in order to build a presence. Professionals usually understand the importance of these activities and know what to do to execute them. They even intend to do them, but they don't always get round to them. After all, each of these actions involve short-term costs for a long-term benefit. Left to themselves, professionals, like all of us, find it all too easy to take care of today at the risk of underinvesting in tomorrow. I've observed both the need for and the power of good coaching. I frequently ask groups of professionals to report about themselves what percentage of their capabilities they think they are currently functioning at. The answers vary, but they can be surprisingly low. Professionals frequently report that they're diligent and they're working hard, but a surprisingly large percentage report that they are not turned on or excited by their practice. They're just grinding it out. This difference between working hard and being excited may be subtle, but it makes a world of difference in leading to marketplace success. I once interviewed the managing professional of a large office of an international professional service firm. I had been told that without changing personnel or investing extra funds, he had converted a number of the firm's declining and demoralized branch offices into flourishing practices. I was eager to learn the secret of his success. Would it be strategic planning or tight cost control? Marketing training for the professional staff? The key thing that I do, he told me, is to call each person into my office or go into theirs and ask a single question. What is it that you want to be famous for. This man reported to me that a very high percentage of professionals have no answer to the question. The typical professional, he said, is a highly trained, intelligent person, usually ambitious, who wants to feel special and to feel that the firm he belongs to is special. But it's remarkable how few people are focused. My job in managing professionals is to engage, encourage, focus, and channel their energies and ambitions. My own research with professional service firms of all kinds has confirmed the wisdoms of these remarks. For firms to function effectively, they must foster an atmosphere of dynamism, of ambition, of aiming to be the best. It's the manager's task to keep the professional's eyes fixed on this continuous ambition to improve, to grow, and to develop amid the hurly-burly of today's pressures. So, what do good coaches do? How do good coaches achieve results? Effective managers recognize that you rarely turn on professionals or get them to change through speeches or vision statements or inspirational group meetings. They know that the only truly effective way to influence people is one-on-one, highly individualized, closed-door counseling. Above all else, good coaches pay attention to the individual. They're close enough to know what each person is doing to be able to offer substantive suggestions and help. They're always dropping by to discuss, how's it going? Good coaches use many approaches in motivating their people, recognizing that different individuals are turned on by different things. What works with one person may fail with another. Among the many separate and different things that may motivate a given individual are money, external marketplace esteem, internal status and recognition, autonomy, appreciation, professional pride, teamwork, an especially challenging assignment, rivalry, or any of a numerous list of other hot buttons. One of the key talents of a good coach is the ability to recognize in each human being what motivates each specific individual and deal with that person on their own terms. Good coaches don't theorize about what should motivate people. Instead, on a case-by-case basis, they discover what does motivate each person. A good coach recognizes that coaching is a continuous process, and the coach does not save up feedback and performance guidance for a once-a-year grand counseling session. Constructive feedback and suggestions are much more likely to be accepted, and hence be more effective, if they're offered in small increments. Similarly, if counseling advice is given long before performance is to be assessed and not when it directly leads to reward, then it's more likely to be seen as a source of help, not as an evaluation. When good coaches give feedback, it should not just be a critique, but should contain concrete action ideas for how to improve. Good coaches tell people not only that they should improve, but show them how. They are thus seen by those they coach as a source of creative ideas. Effective managers go out of their way to celebrate successes and triumphs. They make constant use of approval, visibility, recognition, and appreciation. Ask your people how often they hear, "well done," or "thank you." Ask them whether they'd like to hear it more often and whether it would affect their productivity at work. However, let's be sure, good coaches must also be demanding. When a good athlete successfully jumps over the high bar, what does a good coach do? Two essential things. First, celebrate the accomplishment, and then raise the bar. Come on, you can do it. Coaches must be simultaneously chief cheerleader and chief critic. One without the other is insufficient. Part of the skill of coaching is knowing how high to raise the bar, i.e. judging for each individual separately what the next challenge will be, stretching but achievable. Good coaches know that getting people to change is difficult. People, you and I, prefer to stick with what we know how to do and the way we know how to do it, rather than risk exposing ourselves by trying to learn something new. To overcome this, good coaches are adept at structuring small pilot projects designed to give the individual and the group the experience of an early success. They rarely ask people to make major changes, but instead say things like, Let's just try this one small thing and see if it'll work. Good coaches give people the confidence to try new things and help them accomplish more than even they expected they could. Good coaches also build teams. Since most players will probably be focused on their own personal performance, it's actually up to the coach to look out for the overall best interests of the group. The coach must identify opportunities for joint activities. The coach must stay alert for those situations when what is in the best interest of the player is not necessarily in the best interest of the team. For example, who pursues a specific client, or how a particular matter is to be staffed. And then the coach must negotiate with the individuals involved to do the right thing for the team. This inevitably involves the coach in trading favors. Help me out on this one, and I'll do my best to look after you next time. Good coaches pay significant attention to how the group's resources are being deployed and whether or not all the bases are being covered. Good coaches make frequent use of small group team meetings to discuss, what are we going to do about X? Drawing ideas out of the group. Good coaches are Socratic in this way. They don't present conclusions. I've thought about this and decided we've got to do X. Instead, they reason together with their team. If ideas come up that they're uncertain about, they ask, if we did that, how would we handle the following adverse consequences? Good coaches know that their job is to get people to act differently and to try new things. And that means making people want to do it. This is accomplished in large part by leading them to discover the right answers for themselves. As possible initiatives develop and develop some degree of consensus, good coaches ask for volunteers or assign roles to perform activities on behalf of the group. Susan, would you be prepared to do that for all of us? When do you think you might be able to get it done by? They also make sure that people don't sign up for things they can't get done because they don't want to set the precedent that action promises to the group can be neglected. Good coaches also work hard at developing joint tasks so that people get the experience of teamwork and joint responsibility. Perhaps most important of all, good coaches follow up. They monitor the execution of plans. By the way, Tom, how's that seminar that you agreed to do? How's it going? Anything I can do to help? If things are getting off track, they don't wait for the end of the fiscal year to do a performance review. They gently intervene while there's still time to get things back on track. Prior to becoming a group head, many people would have been asked to spend their whole working lives focusing on their own individual performance. The transition to being responsible for the performance of others is a difficult one for many to make, particularly since, in all likelihood, they still carry some client service or production responsibilities. There's an issue here both of attitude, a willingness to focus on other people and their success, and of skill, the ability to win influence over other people without being domineering. Skills can be taught, attitudes are harder to change. In order to help other people succeed, you will need a willingness to get most of your fulfillment from the success of others. And you'll need a special set of skills, the ability to influence other people's emotions, feelings, attitudes, and their determination. So how do you help other people succeed and play as a team? Part of the answer may be about substance or content. They don't know what to do or how to do it. But this is rarely the biggest issue. Most frequently, you'll be working with highly talented people who do know what to do and how to do it. They just aren't doing it. The causes may be numerous. Fear, suspicion, lack of drive, attitudes, problems at home, or firm impediments in your organization. And you'll find that most of the barriers have to do with feelings, attitudes, and emotions. Your role, therefore, and your essential skill will be to help people fulfill their potential by influencing those feelings, attitudes, and emotions. If you accomplish this, the raised performance level will result, among other things, in greater financial success for your people, for you, and your firm. Note, however, that while money or profitability may be your goal, it's not what you actually manage. What you must manage in order to get the money is the energy, drive, enthusiasm, excitement, passion, and ambition of your people. Your primary skill and the test of all your activities must be whether or not you are able to raise the level of commitment and drive of those you influence. Among the contributions you can make are the following. Create energy and excitement. Be a source of creative ideas and stimulate creativity in others. Forge teamwork. Help develop a common purpose that everyone can buy into. Help to solve problems and break down barriers for team members. Make it easier for them to succeed. Act as a sounding board. Help people think through their issues. Enforce your standards. Deal gently, promptly, but firmly with non-compliance. Be a conscience. Exert gentle pressure when self-discipline fails. And be a constant source of encouragement to improve effectiveness, quality, and efficiency. How would you rate yourself at each of these? How would those you lead rate you? Group leaders cannot and must not attempt to impose their own view of their role on others. This will be doomed to fail. In a professional environment, people must cede permission to be coached, and this can only be done if the role and its limits are agreed upon and well communicated in advance. To close, let me talk about the vision thing. Many management texts suggest that one key contribution of a manager or a leader is to provide or create a vision. Quite honestly, I'm a skeptic about this, not on any theoretical grounds, but simply because as a longtime consultant, I've seen many professional environments, and quite honestly, I've rarely met managers or leaders who have pulled this off. To me, a leader talking about his or her vision sounds too much like follow me, an appeal that is unlikely to work in professional environments. There may be those individuals who, through personal charisma or the painting of an irresistible future, can get large numbers of professionals to follow them. I just don't think many people can pull it off. I call it the Moses strategy, going up into the mountain, receiving the word of God, and bringing it back to the children of Israel, saying, "Here's the word of God, please get excited." And if you remember your Jewish or Christian Bible, you may recall that even Moses had to do it twice before he could get the attention of his audience. My point of view, based upon the most effective managers, is that they don't say, "Follow me." Instead, they say, "Let me help you." The management writers call this servant leadership. The key point is that the central goal of either approach is to get your people enthused, excited, and energized. Unless you have a very special skill, then I suggest you focus on what excites your people, not just on what excites you. This has been How Managers Add Value, the second episode in my 15-part series, Managing Professionals, Attitudes, Skills, and Behaviors. In future episodes, we'll look at the topic of the specifics of coaching, how to relate to different kinds of people, and how to create a team out of a collection of individuals. If you'd like more information or access to other podcasts in this series or the previous series, Marketing Professional Services, go to my website, davidmaester.com.
This podcast series is now available for purchase, both as a single episode and as part of a DVD set from my website, davidmaester.com/store, STORE. I'm also pleased to announce that my forthcoming book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker, is available for pre-order from this same location.